Chapter 18. The End Paradox. I was shivering when I got back to the flat. Remembering Michael's death had lowered my body temperature to ice. Dad came out of the bedroom, tying his dressing gown belt. "You're back early." Then he took one look at me and said, "What's happened, Jules?"
"Nothing."
I shook my head.
"I'm fine."
Rachel appeared, a concerned expression on her face. She was in her dressing gown as well.
"You look terrible. Was it those kids again?"
"No, I'm fine."
"Sit here," Dad said. I didn't argue. I didn't have any strength left. I sat on the lounge settee. "It was those kids, wasn't it?" Dad said angrily. He was examining my clothes, trying to find evidence of me being mugged. Rachel put the Braun electric thermometer in my ear.
"Did you change the sleeve?"
I asked anxiously. "Used sleeves have lots of bacteria. They can cause serious ear infections."
"Yes,"
she smiled.
"Not too bad, then."
The thermometer bleeped.
"What is it?"
I asked. Rachel read the display and pursed her lips.
"Slightly high."
That surprised me. I was so cold.
"I'm okay, really."
"What rating was the film?" Dad asked.
12A,
I told him.
"Was there something bad in it?"
I shrugged. "Somebody died. A lot of people, actually."
"Oh, Jules." He gave me a hug. "Maybe James Bond wasn't the right thing for you to go and see. Not right now."
"Too soon, eh?"
"You poor thing,"
Rachel said sympathetically.
"I'm all right. Have you had anything to eat?"
"I think I just want to go to bed now, thanks."
"You have to eat something. Your gran will be angry with me if you skip a meal."
"I'll have a hot chocolate," I told her. Dad sat beside me while Rachel put a mug of milk in the microwave. Microwaves break up all kinds of protein molecules, which wrecks milk's nutritional value. But she meant well. "Just the film that bothered you?" he asked quietly. I nodded. "All right. But I'd like to go with you to the next one, okay?"
"Okay."
He leaned in close.
"And don't mention the microwaved milk, please."
I gave him an astonished look. "You're my son," he said with a lopsided smile. "I do listen to you, even though I screwed up with the PlayStation." I thought I might start crying. Rachel stirred chocolate powder into the milk and brought the mug over to me.
"Thank you, Rachel. That's very kind of you."
I think she looked as shocked as I felt. I got into my pajamas and went to bed. I didn't open my laptop, but I did check the catapult was still there. It was. Vladimir McCann was a murderer. Rather, he will be. He's going to kill Michael. I suppose that's when my soul is born into this Julian body, so it shouldn't bother me. After all, I'm living this life because of that murder. But Michael and Giotti are expecting a baby. I loved Giotti when I was Michael. I don't think love like that will ever happen to me in this life. We could have spent decades together. All that love will be lost now, never to exist. That's not fair. There's so much suffering in the world already. What right does Vladimir have to take away a piece of genuine happiness from anyone, let alone me? Giotti will be devastated. And the baby,
What will happen to the baby? It'll never know its father. It'll never know me.
Worse, my Julian life starts after Michael dies, so I never knew my own child. The baby won't know that its father's soul is alive, and even if it did, as Julian, I can never be a proper father to it. I still miss Mum terribly, and I know her soul is safe and sound, somewhen. Michael's baby won't have even that small comfort. There's only one thing I can do. The right thing. Stop Vladimir before he shoots Michael. In the memory, Michael heard Nancy call out. She's the security woman on the door, the one with the CND earrings. She said, "I know you," just before Vladimir fired the gun. She must have recognized him, but she wasn't quick enough. If I'm there, I can let her know earlier, in time to stop it. That way, Michael will live. Which might be a slight problem. My soul leaves his body to live in me. What's going to happen if he doesn't die on time? Does that mean I don't get born? It's a paradox. I really hate paradox. But there's only one way to find out. The news the next morning was all about the Bank of England's announcement that it was increasing the base interest rate by 0.25%. "Finally," Dad exclaimed as he was eating his breakfast toast. "Savings are going to have a purpose again."
"Going to be busy this morning," Rachel agreed cheerfully. "The city will go bananas over this news."
She popped a vitamin pill.
"How are you feeling now, Jules?"
"Fine, thanks." I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. The reporter on the morning news was standing outside the Bank of England, talking excitedly. People were hurrying past in the background, their faces all creased up and urgent. "Take it easy today, okay?" Dad said to me. "What are you going to do?"
"Maybe some schoolwork. I want to get well ahead on the science curriculum before term starts."
"All right. I'll try and get home early, okay?"
"Don't worry. I'll be okay."
"Good lad, you." I wonder if he realizes how much like Barney he sounds sometimes. I took my time getting ready. 2 hoodies again, the catapult in my inside pocket. I put the ball bearings into a plastic box, the type you get to keep food fresh. I laced my trainers up twice, making sure the bow was tight. Phone fully charged. After all, someone's going to have to call the police. I left the flat just before 11. I couldn't risk being late. Even if the tube and DLR packed up completely, I could still get there in a bus or taxi. The underground and the DLR worked just fine. I rode up the elevator out of Canada Square Station at 10 to 12. 40 minutes to go. My limbs weren't working so well. Every part of me had that horrible vertigo tingle. I was going to change the timeline, which was a physics impossibility. Paradox. When Robert Oppenheimer tested the first atom bomb, the scientists who built it were worried the explosion would trigger a chain reaction in the atmosphere that would destroy the world. Could me creating paradox destroy the whole universe? I started walking along the road outside Michael's office at 12:20, searching for Vladimir. I couldn't see him anywhere, but I remembered him, and time was catching up with that memory. Then I realized actually seeing him didn't matter. I knew he was there. It was that simple. I headed straight for the entrance to Michael's office, pulled out my phone, and dialed 999. "What is the nature of your emergency?"
"There's a man with a gun," I said. "He's shooting another man. There's blood and everything. Help, please. We need police and ambulances, now."
"Where are you? What is your name?"
"Jubilee Park, Docklands. Hurry!"
"What's your name?"
I'd reached the steps in front of the big revolving door.
"Hurry! He's going to kill him!"
I shouted into the phone. The people around me started to stare, concern registering. Somewhere behind me, I could hear a siren. That was awfully quick. And Michael was coming out of the sliding door. I started to run towards him. Vladimir was there, waiting calmly, 10 meters away. I tugged the catapult out.
"Hey, you!"
I gaped in surprise. It was Nancy, the door warden, glaring down at me. She started down the steps.
"Yes, you. I know you."
"No, no, no," I groaned. "I'm not the bad guy." The memory was happening right in front of me. I had to stop it. I tugged frantically at the box of ball bearings in my other pocket. They came free, but I lost my grip and the box tumbled out of my hand. Nancy was 2 meters away, reaching for me.
"What are you doing?"
The expression on her face is one of my clearest ever memories. That disapproving frown turning to a comic mask of surprise and panic. She stepped on the ball bearings and flailed about, her arms windmilling wildly. Down she went, as if she'd been rugby tackled, and behind her, Vladimir was raising his arm, the pistol coming up. I dropped to my knees and snatched up a ball bearing, took aim, pulling the elastic back as Michael turned to see what the commotion was about. I fired. The ball bearing hit Vladimir on the side of the head. He bellowed in pain and jerked about in reaction. His finger pulled the trigger. The bullet hit Michael in the side of his chest, spinning him around. Blood sprayed out. So much blood. And then Michael was falling. But Vladimir was turning, one hand held against his head where the ball bearing had struck. All around me, people were screaming and ducking down for cover. I was still on my knees, scrambling round for another ball bearing. Vladimir saw me and started.
"You!"
His face was bright red, suffused with a terrible rage. I was so scared, I almost urinated. He lifted his pistol. I let go of the elastic. The ball bearing hit him square on the forehead. He flipped backwards like a gymnast, his feet actually leaving the ground before he crashed down. 3 of the building's security people pounced on him. The only sound in Docklands was the siren. I ran up the steps to Michael. He was lying there inertly on the top step, blood spreading out from his wound. His mouth was flapping about like a fish in air. I knelt beside him and clamped my hand on the wound. Pressure. You always needed to keep pressure on a wound like that. It says so on the internet. His blood was horribly warm as it leaked out all over my hand. I could feel bile rising, but his gulping was getting slower. Then his limbs started to shake. I screamed. Nancy appeared at my side, tipping back his head and opening his mouth.
"He's having a seizure."
The siren stopped. There was an ambulance at the bottom of the stairs. 2 paramedics were racing towards us. I got pushed aside just as his motions slowed and stopped. The paramedics took over from Nancy, and she came to stand beside me, her arm going around my shoulder. There was a big pressure dressing and an IV bag and an oxygen mask, They cut Michael's shirt open and put defibrillator paddles on his chest. Michael spasmed back to life, and he sucked down a big breath of oxygen.
Hell, that hurts.
His eyes flickered open.
He's alive, I said numbly. Yes, she said. I can't believe how quickly the ambulance got here.
I looked up into the sky, waiting calmly for paradox to strike, to not exist anymore, or for the universe to end. Neither happened.